Hello, and welcome to Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are continuing our study in the book of Genesis with what's going to be a fairly simple chapter, all things considered. We're getting into Genesis chapter 26, and the real beauty of Genesis chapter 26 is that it is, not only is it simple, but also it teaches a valuable lesson about waiting for and obeying God and being prepared to receive God's provision. When we last were together looking at Genesis chapter 25, of course, we talked about the death of Abraham and how Ishmael and Isaac came to bury him, and then we saw the descendants of Isaac. We see Jacob and Esau born. We see them older for later on in life, where Esau sells his birthright for a bowl of soup, essentially. And, you know, Jacob was trying to be deceitful. All of these things, there was a lot of major conversations, a lot of things that we had to take into account that we had to dig very deeply on. But today is going to be very simple, very straight and to the point. Today, Isaac is going to be much older now. It's been about 97 years since the last time we dealt with the Philistines, because that's who we're going to be dealing with today. And that was when Abraham was still alive, the last time that we had words with Abimelech, which, of course, is the title for the king of the Philistines. So this is definitely not the same king. As we saw in chapter 20, he'd be long dead by this point. But what's going to happen is that we're going to see Isaac commit the sins of his fathers, which was disobedience, impatience, lack of faith. He's going to commit the same sin that his father was so horribly bad about committing, twice that we know of that he did it. But then we're going to see Isaac emerge in faith and God providing for him. So let's go ahead and dig into this real quick. So starting in chapter 26, it says, "And there was a famine in the land beside the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went unto Abimelech, king of the Philistines, unto Gerar. And the Lord appeared unto him and said, Go not down into Egypt, dwell in the land which I shall tell thee of. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee, and will bless thee, for unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swear unto Abraham thy father. And I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries. And in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because that Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. And Isaac dwelt in Gerar." So we have this problem that comes into play. There's another famine that comes into the land, and we're not directly told that Isaac has said anything about this, but God gives away in his answer to Isaac in a dream that Isaac is intending to go to Egypt to escape the famine, which, if you remember correctly, is exactly what his father Abraham had done before him. And so God comes to Isaac and says, "No, stay in the land. I will take care of you as I promised your father." He reiterates the promise to Isaac, and basically this is his call to Isaac to be obedient. "Isaac, I'm going to take care of this problem. I provided for your father. I will provide for you." And today we're no different when it comes to this. We all have the same problem, same issue, same lack of faith when it comes to being in a situation that we feel like we have to make an extreme decision. Many times this will happen in our finances. This can happen in our relationships. This can happen in the situations that we're living in, or maybe the people that we're dealing with. We don't want to stick to our guns. We don't want to be patient and obedient to God. We decide that the best way to fix our needs, handle our problems or issues, take care of what we want, is to immediately turn and make a rash decision, even one sometimes that takes us further away from God. And so God comes to Isaac. He goes, No. You need to stay here in the land. If you'll stay here, I will take care of you. And Isaac shows a little bit of faith in God here. He stays in Gerar, all right? He stays there. He abides there. He has not left the promised land completely yet. And it says, and the men of the place asked him of his wife. And he said, she is my sister. For he feared to say, she is my wife. Lest, said he, the men of the place should kill me for Rebekah, because she was fair to look upon. And so Isaac, he shows his faith a little bit to God, and that he stays in the promised land. He stays near Gerar, where the Philistines were abiding also. However, when asked of the men who his wife was, he did exactly what his father before him had done. Isaac very much is a big, big proof of that concept that sometimes we commit the sins of our father. Now, I know there are many people that believe that there are these, what they call generational curses in the Bible. And that is not true at all. A lot of people try to do that, like they talk about Ham, and they try to say that Ham and any of his descendants are under a generational curse. That it's not exactly what is intended there, okay? Because the idea of a generational curse would then be that we have no choice, no free will, no decisions to make in our own personal life, if you will. But rather, what we see here is that when sin is in the environment of a child that's growing up, when it's witnessed by a child, when he sees that carried out, it's very likely that he is going to mimic those sins later on in his life. And here we see it with Isaac perfectly. Isaac is trying to go to Egypt to get away from a famine. That's what his dad did. When Isaac's asked about who his wife is, he thinks he might get killed because of men wanting his wife. So he says, she is my sister. He is repeating what he was taught by his father. And of course, look at what happens. It says, and it came to pass when he had been there a long time that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out at a window and saw, and behold, Isaac was sporting with Rebekah, his wife. So he's told this lie, and then he gets caught in the funniest of ways. Obviously, a husband and a wife have a vastly different relationship than a brother and a sister. And so Abimelech is going by one day, and he looks out of his window, more than likely from a palace, a higher place or higher standpoint, and he sees Isaac caressing, is the idea. Some people think this has a little bit more of a inappropriate connotation. No, it just means that he's holding her the way a husband would hold his wife in public, that, you know, around the waist or shoulders, this kind of thing. He is caressing his wife. And Abimelech, of course, figures out exactly what this situation is. He's not stupid. It says, Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, of a surety, she is thy wife. And how saidest thou? She is my sister. And Isaac said unto him, because I said, lest I die for her. Abimelech calls him in. He says, why are you telling everybody she's your sister? Your sister? We know without a shadow of a doubt she's your wife. I saw you with your arm around her waist. The men don't do that to their sisters. Why did you lie? And Isaac, just like his daddy before him, well, I thought if you thought that she was my wife, you'd kill me. And Abimelech said, "What is this thou hast done unto us? One of the people might lightly have lied with thy wife, and thou shouldest have brought guiltiness upon us." Abimelech says, "What would you have done if one of the men of the city had taken her to wife and had had relations with her? You would have brought a sin on our house, just like Abraham before." Isaac here is told by a pagan king, is rebuked by a pagan king for his sin. And Abimelech charged all his people, saying, "He that toucheth this man or his wife shall surely be put to death." God uses Abimelech to begin teaching Isaac the same lesson that he had to teach Abraham, to have faith that God would provide. Isaac was scared God wouldn't provide for the famine, so he's running to Egypt. When God comes to him and says, "I'm going to take care of it," he finally stays put. But then he doesn't have enough faith in God that God's going to provide him with protection while he's near the Philistines. So he lies about his wife. And here God uses this king to not only rebuke him, but to show him that you will be provided for. It will be taken care of. And there are so many times in our lives as God's people that God has told us, if you will obey and do what I ask you to do, I will take care of the rest. If you will obey, I will do. If you will stand tall, I will take care of this. Now, obviously, I'm not on here telling you today that if you do what you're supposed to do, God's going to give you a Mercedes, but I promise you, God will make sure that you have roof over your head, clothes on your back, food in your belly. And here, Isaac had to learn this lesson. He is going to be one of the patriarchs of God's chosen people, but that cannot happen. That won't happen effectively if he has no faith that God will provide for him. And so after this happens, Isaac finally learns his lesson. Look at what it says. It says, "Then Isaac sowed in that land and received in the year an hundredfold, and the Lord blessed him. And the man waxed great and went forward and grew until he became very great. For he had possession of flocks and possession of herds and great store of servants, and the Philistines envied him. For all the wells which his father's servants had digged in the days of Abraham his father, the Philistines had stopped them and filled them with earth. And Abimelech said unto Isaac, Go from us, for thou art much mightier than we. And Isaac departed thence and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac digged again the wells of water which they had digged in the days of Abraham his father. For the Philistines had stopped them after the death of Abraham, and he called their names after the names by which his father had called them. And Isaac's servants digged in the valley and found there a well of springing water." So Isaac then, of course, he finally has faith in God. He's living by faith. He stays in the land. He sows seed, and God blesses him a hundredfold. He has a massively large crop. He starts to gain wealth that was even greater than his father's wealth. And as he's starting to grow this wealth, the Philistines, of course, begin to hate him for it. They're jealous of him for it. And so they go and they fill in the wells that Abraham had dug in his lifetime to try and stop Isaac from amassing so much wealth. But instead, Isaac continues to do what he's doing. And eventually, Abimelech says, "Look, you got to go. You got too much stuff. You know, everybody's jealous. You're mightier than we are. We don't want you near us. You could become a threat or a problem." And so he leaves from there and goes out, and he redigs the wells of his father that they had filled in. And then God blesses him with finding a springing well, which is a well that has constant water flowing. It doesn't just seep up from the ground. It has a spring that's bubbling into it. And so here, Isaac could have, you know, he could have gotten mad at God. He could have lacked faith in God. "Well, God, they're running me out of here. We're going to have to redig these wells. I mean, come on." But instead, he just does it. And he honors his father and he honors God by showing that he has faith that God will take care of him. despite all of the things that have just happened. And God not only blesses him with the wells of his father, but blesses him with an additional one that is has water springing from it. Now, for us, we probably read this and we don't think much about it because you walk to your bathroom sink or your kitchen sink or your outdoor sink or your water hose or whatever, and you have running water access to that at all times if you live here in the States. So we don't realize to some degree how important these findings are. A well where Isaac and these people lived meant life. It didn't matter how much money he had. If he could not access water, he would die, and his flocks and his servants and all that were with him. And so it was extremely important for them to redig these wells, but also it was an even greater blessing that God helped them in finding and locating this fourth well that had a spring in it. Now, of course, we already have seen that Isaac starts out in this chapter and he's got next to no faith. He makes the same horrible decisions his father makes. And God literally gives him the same rebuking and showing that he gave Abraham to build up his faith in the fact that God would provide for him. And Abraham, Isaac goes about, he's doing what he's supposed to do, and God blesses the work of his hands, and the Philistines push him out. They get jealous. They envy what God is doing in his life. And as they push him out the door, I'm sure Isaac was beginning to doubt that God was paying much of attention to him, but he stuck to his guns and God blessed him even more. Now, if the Philistines were willing to push him out when God was blessing him there, how much more so when God blesses him not only with the original wells of his father, but also with this fourth one? Well, of course, look at what it says. It says, "And the herdmen of Gerar did strive with Isaac's herdmen, saying, 'The water is ours.' And he called the name of the well Essek, because they strove with him. And they digged another well and strove for that also, and he called the name of it Sitnah. And he removed from thence and digged another well, and for that they strove not, and he called the name of it Rehoboth. And he said, 'For now the Lord hath made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land.' And he went up from thence to Beersheba." So here Isaac has been blessed with all of these wells. And the moment that he has dug all of them, the Philistines begin to argue with him about whose water it is, who belongs to whom. And so he nicknames these wells Contention and Strife, and then later Roominess, which is the idea that God had he had finally reached a place that he was far enough away he could make a home for him and his family without having to deal with the foolishness of the Philistines. Here, even amidst all of this strife, even amidst all these problems where the Philistines have come again to create an issue, Isaac continues to have faith in God and God continues to provide. Friends, I'm not telling you that there's not going to be times in your life where there are bumps in the road or issues or problems or setbacks that are going to come as a child of God. What I am telling you is that when you are doing what you need to be doing and you're taking care of what you need to be taking care of and you have faith and you are being obedient to God, God is going to take care of you. There's been plenty of times in my life that I could look back and go, yeah, that was some rough days, or yeah, those were some hard days, or yeah, you know, that was when me and my wife first got married. Let me tell you, whew, that's when you start to have fun trying to adjust to a new marriage and finances and houses and all these things. There were many times that I can look back and go, yeah, those were hard days, but even through all of those times, you can see God taking care of his children. You can see God's hand moving in your life where it could have been a whole lot worse than it was. Here, Isaac, despite all of the jealousness, or despite all of the fighting that's going on between him and these people, God continues to bless him over and over and over and over again. And in the midst of this, look at what it says. It says, and the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham, thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake. And he builded an altar there and called upon the name of the Lord and pitched his tent there. And there Isaac's servants digged a well. Then Abimelech went to him from Gerar, and Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the chief captain of his army. And Isaac said unto them, wherefore come ye to me, seeing ye hate me, and have sent me away from you? And they said, we saw certainly that the Lord was with thee. And we said, let there be now an oath betwixt us, even betwixt us and thee, and let us make a covenant with thee, that thou wilt do us no hurt, as we have not touched thee, and as we have done unto thee nothing but good, and have sent thee away in peace. Thou art now the blessed of the Lord. So even amidst all of this fighting, everything going on, we're moving further away from the Philistines. God's continuing to bless and continuing to bless. We have another well that we find and dig out here. And all of these things are going on. All of a sudden, the Philistines show up at Isaac's door. And Isaac, of course, asks them, what in the world are you doing here? You've run me out of that area. You said you don't want me there. Why are you here? And they realize that God was blessing Isaac. And so they come to ask Isaac if they can share in that blessing and make an agreement with them that there would be peace. Now, when you and I are going through life and somebody is giving us problem after problem after problem, and we continue to push forward, push forward, push forward, and God is blessing and taking care of and blessing and taking care of, and then they finally come to you and they go, well, you know, we realized that we were a little bit wrong for that. We have a tendency to want to do what? Get even, right? We want to go, oh, well, yeah, that got you, didn't it? I told you the Lord would take care of me regardless of what you were doing. And now, you're just left behind. You're getting what you deserve. Well, friends, I'm going to tell you something. First and foremost, when you have the faith, God will provide and take care of. But part of maintaining that provision and having that faith is being obedient to God. And Isaac does exactly what he should have done in this situation, because it says, and he made them a feast, and they did eat and drink, and they rose up betimes in the morning and swore one to another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. And it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him concerning the well which they had digged, and said unto him, we have found water. And he called it Sheba. Therefore the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. Isaac had the opportunity to go, you know what, God's provided for me, and you got what you had coming, but instead he shares that provision with others. Friends, we not only have to have the faith that God's going to provide for our lives, but when God does provide in our lives, we need to share that with anyone that is in need of that help. You go, oh, well, I mean, here, though, these guys were his enemy. They ran him out of town. They were filling his wells in with dirt. They were fighting with him over who owned what wells. They were pushing him further away from the city. I mean, how can you share with these kind of people? You can, because it wasn't Isaac's to begin with, was it? If God provided it, then whose well was it? It was God's. Isaac understood that when God provides for his people, they have an obligation to help provide for others that are in need as well. No matter who that is, friend or foe, whether they've been nice to you, not been nice to you, we as God's people are supposed to show love to all of mankind, and that is even through sharing in God's provision for us. Now, at the beginning of this chapter, I told you that Isaac was going to partake in the sins of his father, right? He starts out, there's a famine in the land. He doesn't believe God's going to take care of him. He's headed to Egypt. God stops him and says, whoa, time out. Time out. Back up. No, you need to stay here. You stay here. I will take care of you. I will handle the situation. And so he did stop from going to Egypt. However, the Philistines come around and they ask who the pretty lady is that's with him. And he says, oh, that's my sister. When in all reality, it was his wife, the same thing his father did. And when he says this, of course, it comes to light by God that no, she is indeed his wife. And he is rebuked by this king, this pagan king, for his actions. And after all of this happens, he has faith in God, and God's meeting his needs. He's providing for him. He's taking care of his family. And Isaac continues to show that obedience by sharing God's provision with these Philistines. And then after that happens, lo and behold, his servants have found yet another well. And everything is going great, and everything is going good. But there are times that even though God might be providing and taking care of you and handling things, that there's going to still come yet again another bump in the road. Because look at the end of this chapter. It says, and Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemoth, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. God's provision does not, and you being obedient and having faith in God, does not mean that everything in your life goes hunky-dory. There's a really big problem going on in this world right now with the spreading of this concept of social wealth gospel, okay? Which is essentially you pray, you do what you're supposed to do, God's going to drop a Mercedes in your yard, and everything's going to be great, your life's going to be easy. That is not at all true. You live in an imperfect world. You live in a world filled with sin, and you are an imperfect person. So even if you are a saved child of God, you are going to make mistakes, you're going to sin, you are not ever going to be perfect by any means necessary, okay? Now, in light of all of that, even if you're being faithful and obedient, that doesn't mean that there won't be times that trials come, that issues come, that things that grieve your mind come. I know that Isaac was probably thinking, things are going very good. We're finding all these wells. You know, we've just fixed our relationship with the Philistines. At the same time, my servants have found another well. But even in light of all those good things, his son ends up not just taking a wife of the Canaanites, but taking two wives of the Canaanites. And that brings about a new test of faith for Isaac. Do not be mistaken. If you do not have the faith that you're supposed to have, God will bring you to where you need to be. And once you have that faith and you're being obedient, God will provide for your needs. But that does not mean that there's not going to be difficult times, hard times, things that come, maybe things that your children do or others do that break your heart or make you upset or make you grieve in your mind, as it was here for Isaac and Rebekah. Because you live in an imperfect world. And you live amongst imperfect people. And it will always be that way until Jesus Christ comes again and sets up his own kingdom here. So, as you're going about your week, I want you to take into mind a couple of the things that are going on here. Like I said at the beginning of this, very simple chapter, very straightforward. There's nothing here that I'm like, oh, well, this means this, and means this, this, and this is what the implication is of this. It's very, very, very simple. There's a famine. Isaac doesn't have any faith. God rebukes Isaac and gets him into a place where he's faithful and obedient. And God blesses that faith and obedience with provision. However, don't mistake that and think that, well, if you do what you're supposed to do, everything's going to work out, because there's still going to be bumps in the road, because this is life. Get a hard hat. Sometimes it's rough, okay? But as you're going about your week, I want you to consider a couple of things. First and foremost, if you are where Isaac was at the beginning of this chapter in your faith, where it's not a whole lot there and your obedience to God is, you know, on a basis that you're comfortable with, this is the time to fix that. Friend, I promise you, even if you think you're in a hard place or a rough position, but God is wanting you to remain there, that's because that is what's best for you in the long run. You may not know that yet because you can't see the future and you can't see the trees through the forest, okay? However, God is more than aware of what you need and what's going to come in your life and what it's going to take for you to be prepared for that next battle. Here, at the end of this chapter, I'm sure that Isaac had no idea that Esau was going to end up married to two Canaanite women. However, God had already begun preparing him for that trial by making him faithful and obedient at the beginning of this chapter, with something as simple as, stay in the land and I will take care of you. Which leads us to, if you will fix your faith and obedience this week, I promise God will provide for you. I'm not saying you're going to get rich and be a millionaire. I'm saying that your needs will be met. You will be taken care of and God will watch over you when you are doing what you're supposed to be doing. As David said in Psalm 34, the keys to a good life are being obedient to God and staying away from evil. If you could do those things, then by nature, doing what God wants you to do will give you a long and prosperous life, okay? However, even if you're doing that this week and something bad happens, do not fool yourself into believing that God providing and taking care of you means that there aren't going to be times in life where trials and tests and hardships come. And so that has been Genesis chapter 26. Very straightforward here, and either probably later on this evening or into tomorrow, we're going to do chapter 27 as well. It sends out a little notification for those of you that might be new that are listening on here. I can't see the screen. All I can see is my Bible. But if there's anybody on here that's new, we're glad to have you with us. Thank you for being here today. We pray for all the people. If you need any help, have questions or comments, you can send those on here. You can find me on Facebook, all that. I'm pretty sure I might be the only Zach Ebarb on the planet, so you should be able to find me. The purpose of this whole channel, of course, is to teach you how to study, is to go over these chapters together with you, kind of give you some basic applications of it, preparing for deeper studies later on down the road. So, as always, this has been Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I hope all of you have a great evening and a great week. I'll see you soon for Genesis 27 and then 28 on Friday. And all of you, get out of here and go study.